On today's College Football Inquirer, Brendan Sorsby will not be playing college football this season. Ross Dellinger details the middle of the night legal filing that might have caused the mutual parting of ways. Plus, the Cruz Cantwell bill is getting marked up in D.C. And what's going on at Michigan State? We talk about it all on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. And gentlemen, there is news as we record Tuesday morning. On Monday night, we learned that Brendan Sorsby, the Texas Tech quarterback who has been the subject of all manner of controversy, is going to enter the NFL supplemental draft. He will not play for Texas Tech this year. And Ross, you're in Denver where all the commissioners are there meeting for the college football playoff. Brett Yormark, the Big 12 commissioner, is there also. But Brett Yormark has been burning up the phones, and it's something his league did, something that their attorneys did in the wee hours of Monday morning that caused this. So, Ross, what happened?
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting place to be last night because all of the Division I conference commissioners, all 32 of them, meet annually every June somewhere, and it kind of moves around. And this year it's in Denver, and they all kind of get in Monday night for the three-day meeting, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, CFP meetings Wednesday of that. And so they were all getting in the lobby, and it was right as the Brendan Sorsby stuff was like happening, right as he was going to the it was announced that he was going to the NFL supplemental draft. Everybody was like coming in and getting there and checking in their hotel. So all these people were in the lobby, including Brett Yormark. So it was interesting to see, you might call it subdued jubilation from many of the commissioners, obviously, who were probably pleased at the result and how this sort of how this ended, mainly to just avoid, I think, what was going to be a really complicated situation if Brendan Sorsby played, maybe for them, at least in the fall. So that was all sort of fascinating. But Andy, you mentioned the filing that the Big 12 made on, it was like midnight on Sunday night, basically, and in the Monday morning. And it requested, first of all, it was in federal court, and it requested that a judge give the Big 12 the ability to enforce its bylaws and sanction Texas Tech. But what I found to be most fascinating is that Ken Paxton, the Texas Attorney General's letter that threatened the Big 12 with legal action last week if they were to have taken action against Texas Tech, that letter last week kind of paved the door for this lawsuit. It kind of allowed the Big 12 to then sue, to ask a federal judge, hey, help us against this attorney general who's not allowing a private institution potentially to assert its bylaws. So all that's pretty fascinating. And I think if you ask many legal sort of minds, they'll tell you that it was a pretty crafty sort of legal filing by the Big 12's outside counsel, Sidley Austin, a big global law firm, with some help, I think, from the NCAA. The NCAA dropped its appeal at 2-2 yesterday. So it all kind of came crashing yesterday. All these things sort of happened, including two more state attorney generals, right? Kansas and Utah joining Oklahoma state attorney general to give their support for the Big 12 in sanctioning Texas Tech. So all this sort of happened and ended with Brendan Sorsby going to the draft.
Ken Paxton saw Ted Cruz screwing up college sports, and he said, "Hold my beer." So, yeah, Ross, I want to reiterate one thing: the result we have this morning, which is that Brendan Sorsby will enter the NFL supplemental draft, cannot legally occur, or most likely does not, if Ken Paxton decides not to weigh in, if you will. This is one of the all-time cell phones in politics. Absolute, yes. Mwah, magnifique. Enjoy voting for him. Lubbock.
It's not been a great year for Ken Paxton. Anyway, Google his name. You'll see. But
things are going. Things are fine.
Issues. Yeah,
things are fine.
But it's true because he did open the door to this, because we talked about this on the show last week. They were at a weird stalemate because the Big 12 couldn't sanction Texas Tech for what it was going to do. They had to actually do it. Like, he had to play before they could even consider sanctioning him. And then Texas Tech couldn't preemptively sue the Big 12 over sanctions because there were no sanctions, because they couldn't do that till he played. So,
right. So there's all these preemptive routes.
Yeah.
Right. There's all these like preemptive routes, which is difficult to do legally. But what's not preemptive is to respond to a letter that was sent, right? Threatening to take legal action against a private entity to enforce its bylaws that are very clear. So it is. It's pretty fascinating that it all comes down to this letter that Ken Paxton sent, opening the door for a filing. And the fact that it was in federal court, I think two issues there. One, most legal experts, at least I spoke to, thought that a federal judge would end up ruling in favor of the Big 12 because they would have seen it as a federal judge instead of a state court. They would have seen it from a national perspective. And, you know, 90, 95, maybe 99% of the general fan base was against him playing. And so the thought was a federal judge would rule the same way. But a second part of when you file federally, guys, is it's difficult to move back the date. So it's easy in state court to keep delaying dates. In federal court, it is not as easy, which meant that he was sort of in this bind of, well, you've got to decide on this draft that's in a week, or you got to take your risk for a federal court date. That could happen before the season or during the season.
What do they call it? The rocket docket? They go fast in federal court.
Yeah. We haven't learned anything here today, guys. If this is a sitcom and it's supposed to wrap up in 26 minutes, or a family drama in 46, if you will, we've learned nothing here today. No precedent has been set. The moral referendum against gambling in college sports still exists, yet the pervasiveness of gambling in college sports, brought to you by your favorite local sports book, still persists. This has been much ado about nothing and hasn't changed anything.
I disagree, because I think we found what would unite all
stripes
of
true
fan bases.
Yeah,
found it, and they would
only,
like. They would like.
It only
like
didn't it happen. For, it only didn't happen because one politician screwed it up. This kid would be playing this fall if it wasn't for Ken Paxton.
One politician did, and what we learned is generally
don't threaten
mostly
things legally. Probably.
Well, that too, but
don't
also
no, don't no. Legal threats
people
if you're not going to actually do it.
That has not
people
been proven at all, and that will persist.
Yeah,
people legal threats will persist.
On your own team.
Legal threats will persist and thrive in college sports from now until the end of college sports.
Yeah,
we've learned nothing. Yeah. Essentially, this was one of the dumbest off-season news cycles in history.
Oh, it was dumb for sure. But yeah, no, I think I think we know that where the line is for most people, and it's they would like there to be a rule where you cannot bet on your own team, and that if you do it, you're gone, and that's. That's what people want, because people don't seem to care one way or the other how much they get paid, how they get paid. Like it's not that they don't care. It's that there's a wide range of, I think it should be this, or I do care, or I don't care. This one, 99%, Stephen Godfrey accepted. 99% was like, we would like there to be a rule about that. And we would
I would love that. I would love for there to be a rule about it. As my colleague Andy Staples suggested, there should be a rule in a future collective bargaining agreement. I think he should have served 6 games to 12. Like we talked about this on the last show. We don't have to get into it. But guess what? None of these things have happened. We have not gotten any closer to a better framework for when these things happen. This was a bespoke incident. We've established no guardrails or guidelines. Yes, Andy is right that a moral narrative has emerged, but we're going to play all this out again a lot sooner than people realize. I think the biggest misconception as we leave Brennan Sorsby is that this was some sort of isolated incident. This is going to happen again. It's going to happen a lot.
No, I know it's going to happen again. What I'm saying is what is going to happen again is some player who bet on his own team is going to get caught betting on his own team. That is definitely going to happen again. What may not happen is that player hiring the most expensive attorney he can hire and getting an injunction, because the school may be like, juice not worth the squeeze here.
I mean,
yeah, that's probably the one thing we take away from this is that in future when this happens, I'm guessing you'll see an alternate approach, but maybe not. I don't know.
Wait, hang on. See, but, you guys are saying that there won't be a bunch of trial lawyers circling the next time this happens? Tom Mars is always available.
No,
guys.
I think a school won't support it.
Yes.
After seeing what happened this time around. I think
There's a small issue here that we never really got to, which I kind of thought we would as we circled camp in August, which is that this is Brendan Sorsby. Remember that conversation? We're talking about Brendan Sorsby.
So what if it's Cam Newton is what you're saying?
Not a game.
Yeah. Well, Brendan Sorsby.
Brendan Sorsby. Okay. The former Indiana guy who had a decent season at Cincinnati where they want to fire Scott Satterfield.
Two decent seasons.
Well, and bully for them. So we're talking about Brendan Sorsby here. Wait until this involves somebody that they want to keep. Wait until this involves someone who didn't just sign with the school 5 minutes ago.
Oh, this is somebody they want to keep. Anyway,
I was about to say, look at it from Texas Tech's perspective. They paid upwards of $4 or $5 million
for
a player to come in and like plug a pretty big hole at the most important position on the field to compete for a championship. I think that's how they viewed it, and that's why they fought for it like they did. But I get what you're saying, Godfrey. There are much better players out there, and there probably will be potentially much better players do this again. I just think the visceral reaction we saw, like I don't think I've ever seen anything so one-sided, any kind of issue at all, ever. Like in college athletics,
nobody agrees like this.
Pretty wild.
The pro basketball back to the NCAA, I think was more vociferous.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, the Betty Ako saga and all that. That's true. That was pretty hard.
That was pretty rough.
I think there were more people who were apathetic about that than they're like, eh. Whatever, he's in the G League.
Well, the rules are like there's a gray area of the waivers on that one, you know?
Yeah.
So I think people were like, well, the NCAA has a gray area, but this one's like obviously not any gray area at all, right? Any knowledge that we've seen.
I'm upset the most because I have to agree with Cody Campbell, and that's a tough spot to be in. he issued a very, very long statement. By the way, I like that, much like Tillman Fertitta at Houston, and sometimes this happens, like T. Boone back in the day at Oklahoma State, we're all just sort of operating under the assumption that, like, there might be an athletic director, there might be a chancellor, there might be a board of whatever. Cody Campbell owns Texas. He runs it, okay? But it's his team. It's Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. So he issues this 2-page statement, and he makes a very good point that We haven't advanced anything here in terms of treating the kid for gambling addiction. Keeping him within a community. As disingenuous as Cody Campbell is about so much in college sports right now, he brings up an excellent point, which is that the next time a kid falls prey to this kind of stuff and does this, whether he's betting on his own team or not, by the way, Indiana pre-Signetti, this is going to be while you're not playing. This is going to be
except for that one when he was.
Did it matter? No. You know what we didn't talk about last week, so we can put a bow on this. Tongue removed from cheek here. This is a serious conversation. Unfortunately, this Sorsby hurricane has now passed, and we have not had a substantive conversation in college athletics about gambling and game fixing. And the massive gulf between the two. Because if Brendan Sorsby had been game fixing, which is what a lot of casuals on the internet believe and histrionic people on Twitter, which is a cesspool anyway, but I want to sit those people down if they're even real and not bots.
He would have been charged criminally by multiple agencies.
Yes. While the FBI has seen better days, the FBI, I think, would still be functional enough to be at Brendan Sorsby's doorstep. Sorry, that was tough to say. Had he been game fixing, there's a massive difference. It's not even the same thing with what happened here with Sorsby, who is a gambling addict, and what happened with Alabama State basketball, if you guys aren't familiar. That's where an entire team conspired to fix a game.
Right. The concern is this is a window to game fixing. What's interesting is the amount of money Brendan Sorsby makes now probably makes him immune to the pressures of someone trying to force him to fix a game. But also,
probably
the idea is he makes so much money. Why would you even need to gamble? And the answer is addiction.
Because gambling is not about making money; it's an addiction.
Yeah, Yeah. But so to back to your Cody Campbell point, he did make that point. And in that 2-page letter, he did then turn it to, and that's why you can pass the bill that Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell put out that I may or may not have written myself.
That I paid for. So,
Good segue.
And that's exactly what we're doing here, because
next topic.
When we come back, Ross Dellinger is headed back home to D.C. at some point, and later this week in D.C., there is a markup session for the Protect College Sports Act, the Ted Cruz, Maria Cantwell authored bill. We'll talk about that when we come back. We're back at the College Football Inquirer, and gentlemen, Ross is headed home to D.C. later this week, and there is something afoot, and it's probably not one of those where Ross is going to put on his nice clothes and go over Capitol Hill and then wait, and then somebody's going to say, never mind, this is probably going to happen. And it's a markup session for the Protect College Sports Act, which is the very glorious name of the bill that Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell authored about college sports. Mm-hmm. So, Ross, can you explain what this process means and what happens next?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know what this is, and I didn't until fairly recently, what a markup is. And all it is basically, first of all, it's in a committee, a Senate committee, and all the committee members, all these senators will make amendments during this sort of session. It's probably an hour, 2 hours, maybe even 3 hour session. They'll make amendments, proposed amendments to the bill. And those amendments will be voted on, and included or not included, depending on how the individual votes go. And then at the end of it all, they will take the full bill and they'll vote on it. And if it passes, the next step is it going to the Senate floor for a vote. If it doesn't pass, which I would be very surprised if it doesn't pass, usually you don't hold one of these if you don't have the votes for it to pass, and it only needs a majority, right? And there's a majority, I believe there's one majority Republican on advantage on the committee, the way it works, because the Republicans are a majority in the Senate. And so each committee has a majority of Republicans. So I would imagine that it will pass and go through. What's going to be fascinating is these amendments, and what they're, are they going to be accepted, and what they're going to be about. Now, one of the first steps in this process is a revised version of the bill coming out, which happened Monday night. We saw a revised version of the bill, and there was one, I think, probably real notable revision. There wasn't much else. The one notable revision was a mandate for schools to maintain their Olympic sport scholarship and roster spot levels as they are right now, if they make at least $80 million in revenue. So all schools making at least $80 million, which includes a few of the Group of Six programs, by the way, would have to maintain their roster and scholarship spots for their non-revenue sports. So that was kind of the big change. No changes to Title II of the bill, which was the pooling of the rights and the anti-expansion that target the Big Ten and SEC, the concepts that the Big Ten and SEC are most opposed to. So, in no surprise, Big Ten and SEC will remain opposed to this bill going into Thursday's markup.
All right, hang on. I got the graphics department here, Andy. Okay, you ready?
Okay, all right. Yep, I'm ready.
So, this is the graphic. Okay, so the last time we did this is no. Mm-hmm. And this says yes, and you guys said it was at 30%, okay?
Yep.
You guys got that graphic? Yeah. Okay. Ross, where are we at? I need to make another line.
So this was 30, this was like the last, was it like a week ago or so?
That's like when I got back from vacation.
A week and a half ago.
Hang on, where are we going?
I probably wouldn't move from that spot that much right now.
This is passing both houses of Congress.
You did this graphic for nothing. Yes, I'm sorry. I probably wouldn't move for that. I think there's a lot of confidence that this has, certainly since they're doing a markup, that this has the ability to get through the committee. And there's a pretty high level of confidence that it has the votes in the Senate. But I want to remind everybody what happened a few months ago with the SCORE Act, in that the House leadership also had a lot of confidence that the SCORE Act had the votes in the House, and that never happened. So you never can be real good predictors with what Congress is going to do. Now, the real issue with, I think, this bill is going to be in the House, because there's, first of all, although you need a majority in the Senate, you need 60 votes, so you have to need 7 Democrats. But in the House, you only need a majority, and that's true. But the House is just a little bit of a mess. And a lot of people are up for re-election. And there's a huge coalition of Black caucus
members
that
are against
any college sports legislation. Is that right? Yeah, probably so. Every 2 years, right?
Yeah.
So. That's where it gets a little tricky. And House leadership, Steve Scalise and Mike Johnson, who, let's just be frank, are
House leadership for now.
LSU guys and SEC guys. And they have spoken out, at least Steve Scalise has spoken out against this bill. I have a feeling if this bill does get through the Senate and gets to the House, the president will probably put the pressure on House leadership to move the bill. So
wait, are you saying Mike Johnson would capitulate to Trump? That doesn't make sense. Okay, I was double checking.
Well, and that would be the part where the SEC and the Big Ten realize that Donald Trump likes Cody Campbell more than he likes them.
Hey, so I was trying to figure out while you were talking, Ross. So he's donated in the neighborhood. Well, he and his wife, Cody Campbell, have donated in the neighborhood of about $4.5 million to Ted Cruz. Donated. Then how much did they spend on Sorsby?
I think it was $4 to $5 million, in between.
They're not going to pay him most of that. Yeah,
they're not going to pay him. Right.
Yeah.
Right,
if you throw in like some jet time, like, you know, just, you know, opportunity cost loss, like he's had like a $10 million offseason that hasn't gone his way. I mean, I know that's like pocket change, but like,
I was going to say, Godfrey, do you know what $10 million is to him compared
not
to
a damn
what it
thing,
is to us?
But I'm just saying,
it's like quarter.
My guy is
just
tossing.
I think he's worth $9 billion.
I'm just saying, like,
I think that's his worth.
My guy is just splashing the pot all off season long. Give me some of that money, Cody. I'll run a propaganda machine for you. I'm available.
We'll see what happens in this markup. I think one of the big questions is what the amendments will be and if any will change the bill in a drastic way to get the two biggest stakeholders on board, right? I mean, it's hard to see Congress passing a bill that regulates an industry without two of the industry's biggest stakeholders. It's hard for me to see that. Plus, having the Black caucus against it too. So there's a lot of things kind of working against this situation right now.
And that's why I feel like it's a non-starter, because if you can't get the SEC and the thing that would get the SEC and the Big Ten on board would make everybody else jump off. And that's the biggest issue right now, because if everybody else jumps off, then you're going to lose that support. So I don't think there's not a solution there.
We made a big deal out of the SEC and Big Ten opposing the concepts of the pooling of rights option and then the anti-expansion. And those are big issues, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's a lot of other issues that in the revised version didn't change, right? Like there's the private right of action, which gives athletes an avenue to sue, which could negate part of the antitrust exemption over the eligibility.
Treat them like human beings. Yeah. Yeah. That's terrible. Yeah. How dare you?
So that didn't change. The state preemption, the SEC, according to a letter from Greg Sankey, wants the state preemption of preempting state laws to be more broad. And apparently in the revised version, that didn't really change much. So like, there's a lot of things that they're against here, and it's hard for me to see them coming around to it at all.
Yeah. So the newsworthiness of this, like, you know, to call back to a second to Sorsby being a dumb thing that didn't change anything, we all learned nothing. I'm increasingly of the belief, Ross, that this thing's going to die. It's not going to pass, which is kind of fine, because I think this really might be the seed that causes real super league alignment to occur. I keep going back.
Yeah. That's right.
I keep going back to the way that was the hearing a week and a half ago. I don't know. Time's blurry, but they, you know, a lot of very important people kind of said the thing out loud, finally talking about what the value of the SEC and the Big Ten working together was. It was weird. It was like they sort of called the thing they didn't want to happen into reality. Yeah, and I've never really seen it discussed that way. What's that?
They said Voldemort's name, essentially.
Yes.
They basically said, yeah, this would work and make a lot of money. Actually, it makes a lot of sense.
Pete Bevakwa said it, and Bevakwa is the athletic director at Notre Dame, and he speaks from an interesting position because no matter what happens, Notre Dame's going to be fine. But they would like this bill to pass. They would like this, the larger, quilt of college sports to exist. That is what Notre Dame would prefer. But Pete Bevakwa was also a former television executive, and somebody asked him about it. And so he answered honestly and said, here's how that would work. And this is what it would look like. And everybody's like, ooh. This is the problem, I think, sometimes with the Super League. And Godfrey's right. Because at the end of the day, this is about the Super League. I wrote this column a couple of weeks ago when the bill came out. How you feel about the Super League is how you feel about this bill. And it's not... I get in argument with people all the time about this because I'm the same way myself. I'll tell you what I want in my media consumption and all that, but my algorithm knows better than my brain. So it's not what do you want, rational, compassionate human being.
It's what you actually responded to.
If you heard that Pete Bevakwa, when he's answering the Kansas Senator's question, if you heard him give you that sample Notre Dame schedule and a part of your body went ding.
Yeah.
Which want a Super League more than you realize.
Andy, maybe not you, but I know you're on three co-hosted. I bet the majority of your on three coworkers did.
Oh, and Ari does not want a Super League. He hates it. He hates it more than I do.
But Andy.
But something in his body went ding, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. When Pete Bevakwa started talking about those potential regular season matchups, I think what is so newsworthy and important, because every time Ross comes in here with this almost some labyrinthian kind of recap of what's going on in D.C., a lot of it doesn't come to pass. And people say, well, how does this affect me as the fan? Mm-hmm. What has really triggered something in me is that now I think something has occurred with the leadership where we're now actually set, like Andy said, putting Voldemort's name out there. I said, God bless this listener. Her name is Rebecca Ruth. On a podcast on August 25th, 2021. If you guys remember what the news cycle was in the offseason of 21, do you remember what happened?
Oh, gosh. That was some COVID stuff and realignment.
No. Remember, we're just starting what is now
big realignment.
The realignment of the Big Two. Yeah. I said on my old show, Split Zone Duo, that this is going to start a Super League. Apparently it was this listener. She's a data scientist. I don't know how she did this. It was the first time I said the word Super League on a podcast, August 25th, 2021. My co-hosts said I was insane. All right. Now this is the same time, Andy,
it's only been 5 years. Wow.
Club. The club starts to become the favorite book of everybody. Almost 5 years later, I know that was August, but now we're in June of 2026. Pete Bevakwa basically just says the thing out loud that Andy, how many times have we written about it? How many times have we hinted at it? We are on the doorstep now. What is going to come of this legislation? What is going to happen or not happen because of this markup on Thursday? The real news here is that we are seeding the Super League to come. I would say I know 34 is the date we talk about all the time, maybe earlier.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we talked about it last week because you were asking why does this matter if it doesn't, if it dies? And I think we've seen the rift among the four leagues like never before, from the bill, from the negotiations, from all of this. And I don't want to say there's permanent damage done with, the conferences in general, but it does feel like that. And this lumped in with the CSC spending, right? Basically the above the cap spending and how different it is. The SEC and Big Ten are spending, I think the average guys is they're spending $10 to $15 million more overall on athlete compensation than the Big 12 and ACC. That huge gap in spending plus this disagreement and issue over the bill, plus the involvement of Texas Tech billionaire smash private equity capital folks who are sort of been meeting a lot with ACC and Big 12. You could see this is, you could see the rift forming, and we're like, we're close to what feels like the apex of separation.
This is the last best chance for the non-Super League people, for the people who would like it to be a bigger thing, for the people who would like more representation, more schools in this, in the highest division of college football.
You're saying that the last best chance is this 30% right here?
Are you making it? Yeah, I am. I sure am. Because, well, here's, I'll tell you why. Because the people we perceive to not have as much power, which would be the ACC and the Big 12.
Right.
They have found a way to pull on a lever of power that typically would belong to the SEC or the Big 12, the Big 10.
Buying senators?
Yes.
Oh, okay, fair. True.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, they have.
All right, point taken.
And they got a bill that is the best chance of any of these bills to actually pass, even though, mm-hmm. as Ross and I have said, it's not much of a chance. If it doesn't pass, that's it. They have exhausted all their options.
If it doesn't pass, there is a clear path forward that includes the words collective bargaining.
Corruption is what keeps us. Yeah. Go ahead, Andy.
Well, and then it's collective bargaining, but with whom and what are the leagues?
Probably a small group. Probably a small group in a self-governance split off type of thing that we've talked about quite a bit. I mean, it is true. And I think people miss the sort of political environment changing. The House is probably going to flip to Democrat. And once that happens, you are not going to get any kind of bill through the House that has restrictions and limitations on athletes' movement and compensation. And so it will be either you have nothing or there's some bill that incorporates collective bargaining and employment.
I think this has to cross the finish line, and we have to achieve sanity, whether it be rules about gambling, whether it be a collective bargaining agreement, whether it be the future of who plays who, whether it be the playoff format. Stay with me. I think Andy's going to applaud me here. We need corruption. We need the old school. No, I'm serious. This is not a bit. We need the kind of corruption and the kind of backroom cigar smoke decision making that got college football to this point. It gave you the product that most people, to Andy's point, whether they want to admit it or not, want to see on Saturday night on ABC. Okay. If we continue to push through government, we are not going to like the result that we receive. I am reminded of, there's a monologue in a movie called Syriana. Tim Blake Nelson, he was an Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Huge OU fan. I was on a TV show with him one time. Massive Sooner fan. Corruption is our protection. It's what keeps us safe at night. Okay? That is the warm blanket under which we sleep. He was talking about the oil and gas industry. Hey. But this is how we are going to actually achieve sanity. This is the sanity people talk about in college sports. You can't unpay them. You're going to have to pay them now forever. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, old white man. It's going to happen. You're going to have to write that check, okay? But if we want to get back to a functional college football that doesn't have to change every 6 months, and Ross may get, like, let Ross sleep 7.5 hours a night, okay? Then we're going to have those same corrupt people make those decisions in the back room, and we're going to have to create the Super League.
Well, bring some new corrupt people in. I mean, look, we're getting union bosses in now, so it's a different set of corrupt people coming in.
Different kind of corruption.
Rich a-holes are born every day, okay? There's a fresh batch.
To your point, Godfrey, and I've said this, I think I've been saying this for about 2 years now, get to the thing you're going to get to and hurry up. Mm-hmm. Just stop all this and get and look, it means there are going to be some schools that want to be in the club that aren't in the club, and that's going to suck. It really is, because I feel for everybody who's going to be affected by that, and the fans of those schools, the people who work there, it sucks.
I haven't yet solved for. I am ready to sit down and have a hospice conversation with the group of, and I've said that on the show. That's a big deal for me. Yeah. I am not yet ready and don't know what to do. And I don't want to repeat myself every week, but I don't know what to do with like the Virginia Techs and the K-States of the world. I got to figure that part out.
I can't imagine a big, quote unquote, big time college football league without them.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
And that's what I worry about is Iowa State, K-State, Virginia Tech, NC State. I always use those schools for some reason. But like, I don't, we still got to figure that part out. And then if it's an access into a postseason, if it's a scheduling agreement, I don't know. But the rest of this.
What it should be is a Premier League and a championship division where the bottoms, whatever, get relegated and the top, whatever, get promoted. That's what that would actually be really interesting from a fan standpoint, from everything else. Promotion and relegation would be great. I mean, look at Tottenham this year. Like, I don't even like soccer, and I was Googling Tottenham throughout the last month of the Premier League schedule to see if they were going to get relegated. So,
yeah,
but I don't think that's going to happen because it's never been a concept in American sports, and I don't see how anybody who runs a business would agree to it.
And those who have the gold make the rules, and those who have the gold will not agree to those rules. I don't believe.
Could y'all imagine?
Unfortunately,
could y'all just give me 1 second? Now we got to move on. Could you imagine your typical corruption NCAA enforcement case? Like let's use my alma mater. No reason. Let's just use them. Like at my alma mater, and you imagine like so. Think about like where you were with Hugh Freeze, and you're nationally ranked, and you're you know one of the playoff teams in the bracket, and then you're corrupt as hell. You do a bunch of bad stuff, and then you get relegated because of that, because of enforcement. The lawsuits. Oh my god, like it would be unprecedented. Yeah. It would be a 9-hour John Grisham movie.
It's not going to happen. But
no,
yeah,
no.
It would be.
It would be amazing, though.
Yeah,
good TV, Andy.
It would be good TV, but this has all been good TV too, and it's been kind of annoying. So, gentlemen, we've talked macro a lot. Let's go micro. One school, because a very respected person at Michigan State came out Monday and said something that sounds like exasperation to me. We'll talk about what Tom Izzo said and what it means for Michigan State as they are looking for a new athletic director and a new president. We'll talk about it when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and not often we lead with something that a basketball coach said, but this is a serious effect on football as well. And when Tom Izzo speaks, you probably should pay attention to what he's saying, especially when he says something like he said on Monday. So the reason for this, there was a press conference to announce their new jersey patch sponsor, which is the credit union attached to Michigan State. But everybody wanted to know, hey, what do you think about the athletic director, Jay Batt, leaving for Kentucky? And Tom Izzo unloads, and it's not just about Jay Batt. It's also about their president, Kevin Guskowitz, leaving for Clemson, and he hasn't quite left yet, but he's on his way out. And here's what Tom Izzo said. He said, I can't stand what's going on. I've had it. This is self-inflicted. We just lost the best president to ever be here, maybe one of the best. I'm very upset about it, and I'm sick of it. And he went on to say that basically the 600,000 living alums of Michigan State had better stand up and do something or things are going to get bad. I'm not worried about the institution itself, the university itself. We're a college football show. I am interested about what this means for Michigan State going forward athletically, though, because, you know, Jay Batt leaves right after firing Jonathan Smith and hiring Pat Fitzgerald to run that program. And we looked at that hire and we're like, oh, Pat Fitzgerald, you know, outpunched his weight at Northwestern. But is he equipped to handle this era? We don't know. This is a weird one, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Ross, do you have anything to add? Because I'm going to start asking more questions than I'm going to give takes on this one, because I think we're going to learn about this in the next like couple months.
Mm-hmm. No. Fire away.
So I was having this conversation with my Phantom Island co-host, Ryan Nanny, yesterday. You know, most of the college football nation has a pretty good working knowledge of the problems and the power vacuum that occurred at Penn State after the Paterno scandal. Like, I think if I use the phrase Joe Bot on a college football podcast, everybody kind of knows what I'm talking about.
Right.
I think it stands to reason if you're looking for an origin of this problem. If you go back to the Nassar scandal, mm-hmm. Michigan State has kind of been a destabilized entity in athletics since the public surfacing and then the judgments on the Nassar scandal. And I'm not just trying to tie causality here. But it stands to reason, you know, Michigan State doesn't have the national profile of a Penn State. Also, as it's been pointed out to me, all the oxygen has been taken up by the University of Michigan in recent years with Harbaugh, with Spygate, with everything else that's going on.
But then winning a national championship in football.
Exactly.
And basketball.
Yes. Yeah. Michigan State, because it is this sort of blue collar workman like program, it kind of fades to the background. This has not been a good situation for anybody post Nassar because, and I'm going to paraphrase what's gone on here very quickly. They had this university president who now I'm afraid to say his name because I screwed it up during the break.
Kevin Guskowitz.
Anybody want to help me? Guskowitz. There we go. So Guskowitz leaves, but he also had tried to push through legislation with the board before he left, basically issuing a sort of gag order on commentary about the university amongst board of trustee members. What I know about this, and I'm not a Michigan State insider, but what I know from having conversations is the Board of Trustees has been unstable, and that's a very diplomatic description, since Nassar, to the point where I have heard the moment Jonathan Smith got hired that he did not have full support. I'm not blaming the Board of Trustees for Jonathan Smith not working out, okay? But I am saying...
That looked like a man who didn't have full support.
Absolutely, the entire time. Yeah. I'm not saying Jonathan Smith was sabotaged or anything like that. I am saying that we all thought that was a pretty good hire at the time and that there has been a sort of internal dysfunction since Nassar at Michigan State. Now, you take that all the way to the present. Tom Izzo is sort of the real, I think, stakeholder here that's left, right? He's the dean. He's the guy who's brought national championships to Michigan State. Mark D'Antonio is long gone, so... Izzo's the guy here. So for him to say this publicly, I think was a very calculated move. It's probably necessary. There's a leadership problem here, and we haven't even gotten into Jay Batt. Jay Batt was really considered a rising star amongst ADs, came to Georgia Tech, was a lieutenant at Alabama. My assumption, he basically doubled his salary a year and a half ago when he went to Michigan State, Andy. And my assumption, as was the assumption of other people when that happened, was he would continue to advance Michigan State's athletic department to the point where maybe they're playoff competitive again. And then, hey, you know, if Greg Byrne ever went anywhere or Greg Byrne took an advanced role, he'd probably be like the number one guy Alabama would hire. Now he ends up at Kentucky because I think it was a combination of things falling apart. He had a clause in his contract that said, if there's a change in the president's office, my buyout is reduced dramatically.
The key and man then there's clause. The, yeah.
And then this really great job that wasn't that great a couple of years ago, but I think is really great right now at Kentucky opened up. So it was a no-brainer to leave, right?
Yeah. I would agree with that. And you point out the Nassar thing. So in the wake of the Nassar scandal, Luana K. Simon, who had been their president for a long time, leaves. Is pushed out, however you want to describe it. Mark Hollis, who had been their athletic director for a long time, who's Izzo's guy, is pushed out. And
badly, so, I might add, badly.
Yeah. And there has been a revolving door at both of those positions ever since.
Every major position, with the exception of Tom Izzo, since the Nassar scandal has been sort of tarred and feathered in the world of sources around Michigan State. What that tells me with my experience in dealing with hashtag sources is that you have a lack of central leadership behind closed doors and that this problem will persist. Now, if we want to spin it forward, how does this affect Fitzgerald? Fitz is no stranger to messy situations. Like Northwestern was sort of the opposite of aligned when he took that program over. I know he was an alumnus and he eventually became very well loved before he didn't, but this is not a great job. I'll just cut to it. Right now, this is not as good a job as it should be in college football because specifically of problems that Michigan State leadership could correct if they wanted to.
So what's fascinating about this is you've got two universities, both in the Big Ten, both in the same state, you know, with elected board members that assert very much control over the school and the athletic department. We've seen it at Michigan and certainly we've seen it at Michigan State. I think the boards there are different than a lot of other places in that they are elected and they feel like they have this, and they've said it publicly, right? This fiduciary duty. You hear that a lot because they're elected officials and they almost treat it like they're, like, you know, the school's Senate of some, you know, senators for the state on representing or, the school or something.
Or the water board and, if we want to go local instead of the water, national.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think their influence is something I just don't see. And we see a lot of influential boards, obviously, in the country. But at these two places, it's like at the next level. And I don't know, again, if it's because of how big and how like valuable the athletic brands are there or that they're elected or all those factors. I don't know.
I think that has to do with it. If you have more alignment on your board, which yeah. I think in that situation, when you have a group of elected officials, it's probably more difficult to have alignment. A lot of boards in other states, and you guys have covered this and dealt with this, are basically handpicked by the governor who's in power at the time, which right. tends to create alignment. It also, if you're a political enemy of the sitting governor, you have a big, big problem. But in this case, you have more chances for board members to be at odds with one another or with policies of the university, with the president. And I think that's what you're dealing with now is you do have a few board members who in this case it doesn't look like they can be reined in. And so this is going to keep happening. Tom Izzo said in this soliloquy he had on Monday that in a few weeks, he'll probably come out and say more. My guess is he's marshaling forces here to yep. come out and maybe propose something.
Which puts
a change maybe. Yeah.
Which puts Fitzgerald in a really interesting position, Andy, because we are a football show where you have yeah. someone who's fresh to this situation, who's coming off his own scandal, but who's also looking to build equity. I mean, I think this is not a lily pad kind of deal for Pat Fitzgerald. I think he wants to be at Michigan State for a considerable amount of time and build them back into a winner. And so this is the kind of fun cloak and dagger off the field stuff that, you know, this is how the individual sausage gets made at the university mm-hmm. level, where there's a lot of potential here in East Lansing. I don't know where you would rank them guys necessarily in the strata of the Big Ten, but this is an undervalued property at present for sure.
Yeah, this is a place that can be very successful in football, already is very successful in basketball. Like we know they can, they have the resources, they have the alumni base. Are they as big as Michigan? Are they as big as Ohio State as a brand? No, they're not. Can they be good enough to play at the top of the league? Yes, they can. So
yes.
that's the issue here. Now, I don't know about you guys. If I were just surveying the landscape, like because Pat Fitzgerald obviously knows the league very well, worked in the Big Ten a long time. I would think that being on Tom Izzo's team, whatever that is probably the smart move here.
Yeah, definitely in the short term, because he has no equity built up at Michigan State. I think that the smartest thing, Andy, would be if they go out and if they can win six games this year. That would be probably the best salve. But yeah, I think right now you sort of stay under the wing of that dragon in Izzo. I don't know Izzo that well because I've only ever covered college football, but I feel like they would be of like mind in a lot of
yes,
ways.
Yes, I think they'll get along pretty well. And the thing is, Izzo understands football really well and understands football's place. So
yes, and if I recall, Andy, I was at the Big Ten Championship, the Sad Urban Meyer Pizza, when Michigan State won.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Izzo was very much on Front Street with his support of that run under D'Antonio. I think he knew that Michigan State football success was very successful, like portended very well for basketball, if I recall.
Yeah. And so this one is one we're going to have to watch. So stick a pin in this. Izzo said he's going to come out and say more in the next few weeks. We will definitely pay attention to what he's saying, because again, this will affect their football program as well. And now they're looking for a new AD. They're looking for a new president. This is one of those, if you're an AD, you probably don't want to come until they have a new president. And Guskowitz hasn't even left yet. They got billboards up in town trying to get him to stay. So I don't know. You can go drive to Potterville, go to Joe's Gizzard City. They'll deep fry anything. I think that's, you know, that's a good advertisement. I walked in there
Gizzard
once.
Gizzard City.
Yeah, I walked in there once. I said, "Can you deep fry a double bacon cheeseburger?" The lady's like, "Let me see if it'll fit in the fryer." She comes back. She goes, "Yep, 5 minutes later, I had a deep fried double bacon cheeseburger.
You're so much more Southern than you want to admit, Michigan.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. So we'll pay attention to that.
In an involved board.
Yeah.
You got a crazy board.
You're going to deep fry anything. You got people trying to kill your governor in the woods. That sounds like the South to me, baby.
There you go. We will be back. We got markup to talk about. We got all these commissioner meetings. We have plenty to talk about here. On the next College Football Inquirer, we'll talk to you then.